Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. With the Warriors having 2 days off between the game against the Hawks, which was last night, did a podcast on that with Adam Lauritsen, and then the game on Thursday against the Rockets, had a little bit of time to put some things together and go a little bit big picture today, and then tomorrow will be a preview of the Rockets game. And so it's going to be a two-part episode. The first part is a schedule analysis. It's something that I've started doing for The Athletic and really enjoyed and wanted to put into a podcast. And then the second half is on Dean Oliver's four factors. And both things, you know, if they could be their own shorter podcast, but I thought it'd be good to put them together and make one, especially with something already set up for tomorrow. So the first part is schedule analysis. And I like to do this on a month-by-month basis because it creates digestible pieces and you can kind of get into it a little bit. And so the Warriors have played 18 games between the very end of October, you know, when the season started, and November. And the first big category of scheduling advantages, disadvantages are the second end of a back-to-back. So I used the term Segababa for in writing because that I think that was created by Matt Moore. But it was basically on those games are an obvious but huge disadvantage for the team that is on it because they're tired. They almost always traveled because teams never play back-to-backs at home, almost never, because it makes no sense from a financial perspective for the team and for the season ticket holders. So it generally involves travel on one or both ends. Actually, that's going to be a storyline for the Warriors in December that was not really true in October, November. But it was a notable advantage for the Warriors early on in the season. So the Warriors had four back-to-backs in this stretch, and they faced eight opponents that were on the tail end of a back-to-back. So they'd played the night before, and only one of those eight times was a double. So seven times the Warriors coupled a back-to-back opponent with a rest advantage. So it was neutral in that sense. And the one was a home game. It was the win Saturday against Minnesota. In those games, the Warriors went 8-0. If you remember, their only two losses were the Spurs opening night, so that can't be on a back-to-back, and then the game against the Lakers, which the Warriors were on a back-to-back and the Lakers were not, and that ties in with the Warriors having four back-to-backs. They won the tail end of those three times and then lost the one to the Lakers. And so that loss, though, is the type of one that you see on the tail end of a back-to-back. It was the Warriors were flat, the Lakers came out strong, they worked hard, and then kind of one of those everything goes wrong games. And while those can happen at any point in the year, you can look at the Clippers' strange loss in Brooklyn to the Nets today, though that was without Blake Griffin. Those sorts of things do happen, but they happen more commonly on the tail end of a back-to-back. And so that was an 8-4 advantage during October, November. That completely disappears because the Warriors have three back-to-backs themselves and only face two opponents that have played the night before during December. And those are Indiana at home on December 5th and Dallas on December 30th. And what makes that even more complicated for the Warriors is that all three of their back-to-backs in December are both road games. So they go from LA facing the Clippers to the Jazz. They go from facing the Grizzlies, not with Mike Conley anymore, to Minnesota, which will be tough, and then going from Brooklyn to Detroit, which is pretty complicated in terms of a travel. It's a longer travel thing, but you know Brooklyn's not super competitive, and we'll see where Detroit is. They'll probably have Reggie Jackson by that point. But going from an 8-4 to 3-2 is a meaningful difference, and it's a much smaller proportion of the games. Both the Warriors and their opponents kind of get into more of this, like, game on, day one day, off the next day, and that sort of pattern, which is better in terms of competitiveness, but, you know, it takes away an advantage. And then the second component, which a lot of times it ties in, but it is good to look at it as a separate thing, is just rest advantage in general. So rest advantage is any time within reason. Like, I, for example, in this one, I didn't include the Spurs game because, yeah, maybe they played a preseason game one day before, a week ahead of time, but that doesn't matter. And so it's any time that a team has more days off than their opponent. At this point in the year, it's very rarely. Sometimes you see a rest advantage in one where one team has like 3 days off and the other one has one. That is less important than a 1-0 or something like that. But in October, November, again, the Warriors were 8-0 when they had the rest advantage. So that included seven of the back-to-backs and then one other game. And they were 5-1 when the teams had the same amount of rest. And I counted the Spurs game there because really functionally it was the same. And then 3-1 when they had a rest disadvantage. And that's about what you would expect. It depends a lot on opponent quality and everything like that. But broadly speaking, they performed up to the standard. But usually you won't have it be 8 advantage, 4 disadvantage, and then 6 neutrals. And in December, it's very even. They play 5 games with an advantage, 5 with a disadvantage, and 6 with equal rest. However, it's important to note that a lot of their toughest games, both in terms of opponent and situation, are also among their 5 games with the rest disadvantage. And so the Clippers, Jazz, and Detroit, I mentioned all those a little bit earlier in back-to-backs, all those the Warriors do not have a rest advantage, they have a rest disadvantage. So those are definitely potential losses to look at in terms of everything else, or at least more likely than they would be all other things equal, because it is most certainly not equal in that case. And then something else that I looked into for The Athletic, I put this in the original piece and then thought about it over the course of time and ended up producing fruit in a very, very different way than I expected, is looking at the front end of a back-to-back. And the main reason that can affect the Warriors in a positive way when the opponent has that is that it makes it more likely that they're going to throw in the towel, because you don't want to run your guys into the ground when you have a game the next day. So the Warriors won all 4 of their front ends and also never lost to opponent that played the next night. But that's not really the story, because the Warriors are a good team. They only lost 2 games the entire stretch of time so far. They're 16-2. But what was absolutely fascinating is what has happened to those teams the night after they played the Warriors. So there have been 5 times this year. The Warriors, as I said, played 4 back-to-backs. There have been 5 times this year where the team that the Warriors played the next night. And the first 4 of those, that team lost. And you could say, oh, you know, there can be lots of different things. One of those games was the Pelicans. At that point in the year before they got Drew, they weren't very good. But it also includes one of the most surprising games of the whole year, which is when the Portland Trailblazers played the Warriors, lost that game, then flew to Phoenix and lost to the Suns. And that's the one that really kind of tipped me off to this. So it was something that I was watching as we move forward, is the idea of kind of where that's going. The only exception to that is actually one that relatively proves the rule, because it was Boston. Boston held out Jay Crowder and Al Horford, presumably because they weren't ready, then played them the next night against the Pistons, and they won that game going away. And the reason that a back-to-back is so hard is because you have more guys that are tired, and especially if it comes with a rest disadvantage. Boston effectively neutralized that disadvantage by bringing back fresh blood that was better than the guys they were replacing. So it's an exception in a couple different ways, but you could call it an exception that maybe confirms the rule, at least to a loose degree. So that's something that I'm going to be watching throughout the next month. And another reason why I want to watch it is because the Warriors have 5 more games like that in December. And this time around, they're more of the kind of high caliber opposition variety, including Cleveland, Toronto, and Utah. And so if we're getting to the point where those games are turning into losses for really good teams, then we can start to look at what the effect of playing the Warriors on the front end of a back-to-back is. And so, you know, I'm not going to be too intently watching whether the Nets lose that game, but when we're talking about teams like the Cavs, and then later on in the season, once we get into January, the Blazers again and things like that. Once we get into those circumstances, I'm going to be very interested to see if there's a hangover to playing the Warriors. And there are these kind of things aren't the end-all be-all. They aren't necessarily determinative of everything, but they do explain some of these things. So it's why I want to keep an eye on it. So broadly speaking, the Warriors have had some major scheduling advantages over the course of the year. They also haven't played the strongest opposition. You know, they faced San Antonio once in the first game of the year and they lost. And depending on how you want to classify the best teams in the league, they haven't played Utah at all. They haven't played the Clippers at all. They haven't played the Cavs at all. And a lot of those are coming in December. And then also, you know, they lost the Spurs game. They played the Celtics, who some people would have there after, you know, before they got everybody back. So after the injuries occurred, but before they came back. And then the Raptors, that was a nice win. That was a road win. But that also gets mitigated a little bit by being the night after they played Cleveland in Cleveland and lost that game too. So the Warriors are an incredibly good team. I'm not criticizing that at all, but they have had these advantages in terms of the scheduling, and those are going to calm down a lot and actually largely become disadvantages over December. So that makes this more compelling and definitely changes the dynamic a little bit. And it'll be different to have home games where the Warriors don't have these structural advantages nearly as much as they did earlier in the season. The second broad area that I wanted to talk about in the show is going through the four factors. I believe I did a podcast on this before the year. I definitely wrote a piece for The Athletic. It's a concept that was started by, as far as I know, Dean Oliver, who's one of the forefathers of the analytics movement. And he identified four key elements of successful teams and picked a stat that he thinks is best at quantifying that. And so they're all relevant to the Warriors' success and what they do really well. And he also gave them a value, which I think is makes it in some ways even more interesting. And part of why I like the four factors so much is that each one of them has an offensive and a defensive component. So that makes sense that those are valued together and that they're considered together. And the first of the four factors, the most important, he weights it at 40%, is shooting. The measure for shooting is effective field goal percentage, which is better than field goal percentage because it values in three-point shooting as more, because a three-point shot is worth more. And last year, I believe like the year before where they did the double, the Warriors led the league in effective field goal percentage. They were actually a mile ahead. I think it was something like the margin between first and second was the same as second to 25th. This year, they're posting an even better number. Their effective field goal percentage is 57.2. That is not only ahead of where they were last year, where they finished the year last year. I also went back for this piece, which is going to be at The Athletic, and went through where the Warriors were as of the end of November last year. And the end of November last season, they were at 56.8. So they've even upgraded off of that, and they were 19-0 at the end of November last year. So that's spectacular. Defensive effective field goal percentage, so opponent effective field goal percentage, was a problem for the Warriors earlier in the season. It was, you know, we focus a lot on negative or on defensive rating and things like that, but effective field goal percentage can be another way to measure that because it's about the shots that the other team is getting up. They've moved all the way up to third. They're behind Utah and Miami. Utah had another good performance tonight. They're first in the league, Miami second. And their current 48.1% effective field goal percentage for opponents is slightly worse than their overall season number last year, which is 47.9. So those are really close, you know, just like how their high this year is close to where it was last year. But it's a lot worse than it was. They had an incredible 46.1. So that's 2% different last year because they were in this incredibly dominant stretch. And a lot of that was fueled by their defense. So for people who are concerned about the Warriors' defense, and there certainly are reasons to be there overall, it is a very, very, very good sign that their effective or opponent effective field goal percentage is so low, considering the struggles that they've already had and the acknowledged issue that they're playing suboptimal personnel. I think they will be playing better, however you want to classify it, they'll be playing better defensive personnel when it actually matters than they are right now. More minutes for Iguodala, more minutes for Draymond Green, fewer minutes for Zaza Pachulia, and some of the other like kind of role players that it's not really a strength for them. And also, this Warriors team should improve over time in terms of communication, cohesion, understanding each other. And that wasn't an issue last year. The Warriors started out strong because they had basically full continuity. And they, you know, they went from that incredibly high mark and eventually stepped back into a more reasonable range, though they were still towards the top of the league. They were second last year, I think, to the Spurs. That will probably be a different path this year. They might not improve much on where they are, but if they can hold about the same, that would be an accomplishment. And I think first and third overall in the league, if they could even hold that, we'll see where the other teams turn out. That would be great. I don't think you could ever even ask for much more than that. And especially considering their playoff rotations are going to be stronger than the regular season rotation. So the second of the four factors, which has a basically it's the one quarter weight, so it's 25%, is turnovers. turnovers make sense as an offensive and defensive measure because it's how often you turn it over offensively and then how often you force them on the defensive end. It has been a bugaboo for the Warriors basically forever, especially in the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson era. Oracle turnovers has been a thing for a long time, and it's still not a strength. The Warriors finished last season 19th. They turned the ball over on 14% of possessions, and for reference, at this point last year, they were almost 16%. This year, that 16% is down to 14.5%, which is good, and also they've gone from 19th in the league to 16th, so it's not a huge upgrade, but it's a little bit of one there. And generally speaking, like I talked about in terms of the defense for the Warriors, we can reasonably expect that at least their number, the frequency of turnovers, will drop with time as they get more cohesive, as they play better players and everything like that, even if maybe that doesn't affect the rank, because offensively, that's something that gets better for most teams with time unless they have to deal with injuries like the Memphis Grizzlies are now. So I expect them to do a little bit better than 16th, but not much. On the defensive end, they've also improved a little bit. So they ended last year in 18th place, and they are currently in 12th. So that's a pretty meaningful jump. But it's interesting because last year's team they forced more turnovers, a higher proportion of turnovers than this year's team, and they were ranked 16th. So it's probably in that little nebulous area. I like to focus more on rank at this point in the year than on percentage, because different seasons have different personalities, and you assume that those factors are going to affect teams more equally than the same team over multiple years. I don't know if that assumption is correct based on NBA history, but it's reasonable at this point. When the sample gets a little bit bigger, you can think about it differently, but there are kind of anomalies that come into play with that. So a small upgrade at what is one of the larger weaknesses in terms of the four factors for the Warriors is a good thing. If they could ever push either of those substantially higher, it would really help. I focused in the piece on the idea of improving their offensive turnover rate, so basically turning the ball over less, but the more I think about it, it really could help either way, because if they force more turnovers, the Warriors are such a devastating transition team. A meaningful portion of those will be live ball, and so getting the best transition offense in the league out and running would be almost as good. But why I focused on the offensive one is, A, I feel like they're more preventable given the structure of this team, and they don't really gamble as much, and because they're, like basically all the Warriors teams in the recent past, their half-court defense is much better than their transition defense, so reducing the amount of transition defensive opportunities would be a big help for them in that way, and theoretically that could also foster more transition offensive opportunities. The third of the four factors is rebounding, and I love the way that Oliver does this because he focuses it on offensive rebound percentage, because offensive rebound rate is one thing, and then when you flip it around, it's defensive rebound rate. So it's a reciprocal value that really does work well, but he phrases it in terms of offensive rebound rate and then opponent offensive rebound rate. Last year, the Warriors started out the season incredibly strong. They had Azeli and Bogut healthy. They were actually sixth in the league at this point in the 2015-16 season. But as Azeli got hurt, as other things happened, they finished last season in 19th. They are currently 19th. So you can take that a lot of different ways, but I would say overall it's not bad. I mean, Azeli was a much better offensive rebounder than the players the Warriors are playing significantly. JaVale, Looney have potential to do well in that end, but they are not playing the proportion of minutes that Azeli did. I'm thinking particularly about the game against the Hawks when JaVale played about 5 minutes, Looney didn't play at all. And that, I honestly don't know if that number is going to go up with time, but it's enough. And then defensive rebounding is one of the Warriors' biggest problems right now, and they ended last season 16th, so right around league average, and right now they are 27th, so they're fourth from the bottom of the league, and they're giving up almost 1% more opponent offensive rebounds than they were at this exact same point last year, and they were 21st. So while they started strong on offensive rebounding and got worse, on defensive rebounding they started out shakier and got better. It is entirely possible that they could follow that same path this year based on cohesion, trying out different lineups. If they go more to JaVale, more to Looney, that'll probably work. But it should also be noted that the Warriors' best defensive rebounder this year in terms of individual rebound percentage is Aza Pachulia. So moving away from him might help in certain other ways, because rebounding is a team effort. And we've actually seen a renewed, I haven't written about this much or talked about on the show, I mentioned a little bit, I think, with Adam Lortson, but after, I can't remember which one of the games it was, Klay Thompson in particular has had a renewed focus on defensive rebounding. So maybe just that sort of internal focus, internal improvement will make enough of a difference to really matter here. So that's one that I want to watch. And it's a little bit overwrought in terms of the weakness, though there are certain playoff opponents that could take advantage of it. The Cavs are the most obvious because Tristan Thompson is just a bear down there. And the Clippers, despite having Blake and DeAndre could be a great offensive rebounder, they've focused more on transition defense, and that's certainly a valid way of handling it. And they might actually change that approach a little bit for the Warriors, though Doc is generally a coach that prefers to stick with what got them there. So if they were going to face that series, and there are plenty of teams that will try to go big on the Warriors, if the Jazz do like it looks like, and then maybe they end up as the fourth seed, that would be the nightmare scenario there. But the trade-off in terms of going for the offensive glass is that the Warriors can go small, they can run you around offensively, and almost every team in the league going big, going for offensive rebounds, gives them that weakness on the defensive end that the Warriors can exploit. So it is generally a catch-22, and it's a catch-22 in a way that there aren't really that many anomalies on, that there aren't that many good players who are both dominant offensive rebounders and great team defenders in a way that can work. There are a couple, and Gobert might be able to make it work, but he's generally struggled to defend in space. So we could see how that works out. And the final four of the four factors, it's only a 15% weight, is free throws. Free throws have been a big issue for the Warriors in the past, where it hasn't been a priority. They've been an efficient offense without it. They were number one in the league last year, despite ending the season 25th in free throw attempt rate. And so what free throw attempt rate tries to measure is how often you get to the line relative to how many shots you shoot. And like the other four factors measures, it accounts for things like pace. So if a team shoots a lot of shots, then it adjusts accordingly. And generally the teams that are subject to HACA get a ratcheting up on this just by virtue of that. So Detroit, the LA Clippers, and those kind of teams, though HACA hasn't really been that big of a factor this year, which is a welcome thing. It has happened, but it's not as big. So last year I said the Warriors finished the season in 25th. At this point last year, they were 19th. Right now, they're 16th. So that is an improvement. It was something that a lot of us expected would tie in with Kevin Durant, and it has. But it hasn't reached that full level yet. Atlanta was maybe the high water point in terms of that fourth quarter in terms of what it could be. You know, that from game to game, maybe they pick up an extra 4 or 5, maybe even 6 points a game by being in the bonus a little bit earlier. But they don't have a ton of overall guys that are adept at drawing fouls. It should also, it's interesting that last year, one of the ways, while the Warriors' defense was not better in 15-16 than it was in the championship year, 14-15, they did improve at the opponent free throw attempt rate. So the year they won the title, had the best defense in the league, they were 19th. Last year, they were 12th. So far, they have held that 12th ranking, so they did that. And that's also significant because they started out last year with the worst. They were 16th and then improved. And considering the turnover, it's very reasonable to expect that they could do something similar. And if the Warriors can reduce the amount of freebies that opponents can get at the line, it's another way to help if the defense is a little bit shakier in terms of making shots, in terms of defensive rebounding. And it is notable that they've stayed 12th despite having the defensive rebounding kind of fall off a cliff, because those are very clear foul opportunities. When a guy basically gets an offensive rebound, he's in a very uncomfortable position. They got a fresh shot clock. That is where fouls can happen. So that hasn't kind of coincided, those haven't fed off each other, is a notable sign so far, but obviously we need a larger sample. So I think that's two different pieces that combine to make an interesting whole. I am planning on doing this kind of a podcast sometime around the end of the month, every month. I would generally like to do it on the first day of the month, because then you get full data, but there aren't that many, you know, there isn't so much coming in tomorrow that I think it's going to change the numbers significantly. So we'll see where it works out. And part of the reason why I'm doing that is that doing a Locked On Warriors, Locked On Rockets crossover podcast tomorrow with Ben DeBose, who does the Rockets, previewing the game, partially because since I'm doing the Twitter NBA show on Thursday, it's going to be too late to do a post game with him because I'm not going to get home until probably around midnight Pacific time, so I'm not going to ask somebody in the Central time zone to stay up for that. So that will be tomorrow. It's a game that I'm really looking forward to. The Rockets struggled a little bit in their loss to the Jazz today, but the Warriors have struggled in the past against Harden. He's a vexing player for almost everybody, and with Klay and Andre and maybe even some of the former teammate Kevin Durant, I'm intrigued to see how that happens. And the first time we will see the Rockets under D'Antoni with the fun and gun system, and I think that's going to pose some challenges for the Warriors. Clint Capela is going to do some rim running, but we'll talk a lot about that not only on Thursday show, but then of course doing a game recap of it on Friday's Locked On Warriors, which I'm looking forward to as well. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, indifferent, you can reach out to me, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. I really do appreciate it. It's good, bad, indifferent. I say that and I mean it. And I do prefer it if it's negative, that it be constructive in some way, because just saying something just broadly negative doesn't really help. But if you say something negative and I can build from it, I will consider it and I will improve it, because your feedback is incredibly important to me. And you can also check me out on Twitter at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux. And if you prefer, I guess you call it a text version of these, I am working on pieces that will follow them for The Athletic. They're both features that I'm going to do. The scheduling one should come out on Wednesday because the Warriors November is done. And then the four factors will come out on Thursday because I want to, for that piece, I want to actually use the final numbers from the month of November. So I will wait until those come out, edit those. And so if you really want to be nutso, you can wait and see what the differences between the podcast and that are. But I don't advise you do that because there are better, more important things you can be doing with your time. Also, if you want to support the show, you can check out SeatGeek. You get $20 off your first purchase by using the passcode LOWARRIORS. Really do appreciate that. And you can also leave a rating, leave a review in whatever podcast player you like, subscribe, download every episode. Those things really do matter. They do help out the show, and I'm so appreciative of all the support. The other thing you can do, as always, is to let people know. Tell them social media, tell your friends, whatever you want to do, because are trying to grow the show. This has been a grand experiment, not only on ours, but David Locke's just overall vision for it. And there's a lot of great work going on. I actually did a guest spot on Locked On Nuggets, which was a lot of fun. And if you are a football fan, you should definitely check out either Locked On Warriors or Locked On Raiders, Locked On Niners, or if you're a transplant, whatever other team you care about. So there's a Locked On team for all of that. And also David does Locked On NBA and their fantasy podcast. Josh Lloyd does a great job of that. And if you're into it, I believe there's an NFL draft one, but I'm genuinely unsure if there's an NBA one. So there are podcasts, quality podcasts in our family on a lot of different topic areas. So if there's something you're interested in, or you can just kind of keep an eye on it. And if it hits something that intrigues you, maybe it's a specific player or a fantasy topic that you like, you can check it out there. So definitely keep an eye on Locked On. So happy with that. And I'm also going to have a new podcast, which will involve the Warriors, on Real GM Radio with Kevin Pelton. We did tiers of the Eastern and Western conferences. That will come out on Wednesday at some point. I'm guessing that will be later in the day, so most of you would probably listen to it on Thursday or Friday. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.